Welcome to The Yarn, a school library journal production. I'm Colby Sharp. Today on the podcast, we have Emily Calandrelli, who is the science gal. You may know her from her Netflix show or some of the children's books she's created. Today, we'll be talking about her latest Stay Curious and Keep Exploring Next Level, 50 Bigger, Bolder Science Experiments to Do with the Whole Family. I had a blast talking with Emily about being the science gal, about writing books for kids, about getting kids excited about science, and her hope for Next Level. It's time to unravel, stay curious, and keep exploring. Can you tell us a little bit about the new book?
Yes. So my new book, Stay Curious and Keep Exploring Next Level, is the second installment of the Stay Curious series, and it contains 50 of my favorite science experiments for kids and families. And it's sort of the reason the book came to life was because after Emily's Wonder Lab, it wasn't renewed, and I was so disappointed because I had all of these science experiment ideas that I wanted to put in seasons like 2 through 10 of Emily's Wonder Lab. And I was like, well, what do I do with all these ideas now? I want to keep pulling on this thread of helping families come together with easy science experiments and creating that like easy science joy at home. And I was like, well, I'll just put them in a book. And so I made Stay Curious and Keep Exploring, the first one, and it was received so well by families that my publisher like almost immediately ordered a second one, which I was so excited about because I just like have no shortage of science experiments to share. And yeah, so it has a lot of science experiments for kids and families, most of which use materials that you can probably find in your cupboard at home.
I'm curious why you choose to create all of this content that you do, celebrating the love of science and curiosity and being just these little scientist kids. Why for kids? Like, what, you could do anything. You could create content for adults. You could work doing science for adults or like a normal scientist job. Like, why children?
Yeah, well, I'll say I do create a wide range of content. I have a TV show for adults that is my Exploration Outer Space show that I've been doing for the last decade. But this part of my work is the most meaningful. And it's because when people watch my adult science, it's like, oh, that's so cool and interesting. Thank you for explaining that so well. But when I do the kids stuff, it's like teary-eyed moms and dads being like, thank you for letting my daughter feel free to see herself as a scientist. It's like that impactful shift in their mind, like a light switch that happens that allows them the freedom to dream bigger. And it's like that just, when you're an adult, it's fun and it's interesting. But when you're a kid, it's life-changing. And so just being able to be part of that is such an honor. And I take that role very seriously. I'm on a book tour and I'm doing these book signings and I'm meeting so many of these kids in person. And like, for me, I know it's just like a 2-minute interaction in my day, but for that kid, it is something that hopefully they will remember for a very long time. And I know that. And so that each time I meet with a child, I try to make sure that I am like really focusing on that kid so that they have their special interaction that will hopefully go farther than that moment.
Is science something that you were always like interested in and curious about when you were a kid?
No, it's very interesting. I'm different from my peers in that way. Like, I was not a science kid. I didn't know any scientists or engineers growing up. And so it was just never something that was around as a child. And of course, like, as a kid, and still very much today, the role models in science didn't look like me on TV or in books. Like, we had Miss Frizzle, which was great. But she's not real. And so I didn't see myself in that field. And the reason that I got into it was for very practical reasons. It wasn't for inspiration and it wasn't for excitement. It was because I wanted to get a good job that made good money. And I had sort of this like martyrdom syndrome where I was like, okay, I'm going to get into this and it's going to be hard and I'm probably not going to like it, but I'm going to end up with a good job in the end and make my family proud. And then I got there and I discovered that I loved it. I got to do all of these adventures. I got to fly on the Vomit Comet, do research with NASA. I got to do internships at various NASA facilities and search for liquid water on Mars and think about these like bigger, larger than life questions that would change the way that humanity thought about itself. And I just fell in love with it. I became enamored with it. And that obsession has led to what I do today, because I want to reach those kids that were like me, that didn't know about this, that didn't see themselves in this space, and be like, you should consider this because it's amazing. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. What would you have thought about someone like you when you were 10?
Well, maybe I would have seen myself in this space earlier. There, I had this like shift in thinking. I went back to my hometown in West Virginia, and I go back, my entire family still lives there. And so I go back quite often. And when I do, I try to make school visits to various like grade schools and elementary schools. And I went to one, Mountaineer Middle School, this past year. And I just happened to wear, I don't usually do this, but I just happened to wear this like very frilly dress. And I wore this like kind of like headband crown type thing. And I made this huge explosion. I made a, like this paint can rocket explode to the ceiling. And I did elephant toothpaste that was colorful and messy. And I was like, what would I have thought as a middle school child if I could have seen someone who looked like that do science? Like, I feel like that would have shifted. And ever since then, every time I put myself in front of kids, I'm very intentional with like how I present myself and what I look like. And I don't shy away from being feminine, just because I think it has that cognitive shift that we don't normally get to see.
Yeah, my sister-in-law is a huge fan and their children. And she was sharing videos with me last night. Oh, check out this video of Emily that she's doing. It's like, it was like a video of you. Like, it had something to do with fashion and different things. So I'm like, oh yeah, we probably won't talk about that. We'll talk about kids' books, but it is interesting. Like how many, like my brother and sister-in-law, they have three little boys and they love your content and watching your show and your Instagram reels and all that. So it's pretty cool. So let's say I buy this new book, or I'm a parent, I'm buying this new book, a teacher buying this new book. What is one thing I'm going to find in there? Can you give us an example of one of the experiments?
Oh, yeah. Like one of the easier experiments that I do with my daughter, because my daughter's a little bit young for the book. She's 4, and the book is really meant for ages 5 to 12. Yeah. But I say that only because so many of the science experiments are easy for littler kids. They're just not really going to grasp the science behind it. But one of the easier ones that I love and I do with her is the Bubbly Alien World, where all you need is Bubbly Alien World. Bubbly Alien
World. Great title.
It's pretty fun. And so here, this gives you a good color of the book. So with this book, every single experiment, I have an intro where I connect the science that you're about to learn to something that's real in the universe. Mm. That's something that's in real life. And for this one, I talk about Saturn's moon Enceladus. And I talk about how we thought it was this cold, dead planet, nothing going on there. And then all of a sudden, we have a satellite that discovers these bubbly plumes that are jetting off from the surface, revealing a world of an ocean, a salty ocean underneath its icy crust, meaning that's like a big deal because you need liquid water to sustain life on any planet. That's our theory. And so anytime we can find liquid water on a planetary body, we think that there might be life there. And so Enceladus is this bubbly alien world that could potentially have life there. And so it's really exciting. I present that idea. And then I say, now let's do the experiment. All you need is oil and water and food coloring and an Alka-Seltzer tablet. And you put the water in, you put food coloring in, you put oil on top. And I talk about how oil is less dense than water, and that's why it rises to the top. And then you put your Alka-Seltzer tablet in, and it starts to bubble. And it bubbles because in an Alka-Seltzer tablet, you have an acid and a base. It's the same stuff that's in lemon juice and in baking soda. And when you mix those two together, it kickstarts an acid-base chemical reaction that creates carbon dioxide, bubbles, and those go up, and it looks like this bubbly alien world. It's colorful and beautiful. And so then when I'm explaining the science, it's not just me lecturing the reader. It's a conversation between me and a curious kid in the book asking questions about what they're seeing. Oh, this, they're separated. The water and the oil separated. Why is that? Oh, it's bubbling. Why is it bubbling when it's wet and not when it's dry? And so I try to encourage the kids who are watching this and reading this to ask their own questions by showing them another kid who's asking lots of questions.
Mm. That's so interesting. So we in class, I teach fifth grade, we are currently in, I guess it's called a scientific process writing unit. So they come up with a question, they develop a hypothesis, they have to plan out an experiment and then do the experiment at home. And then we're going to like write conclusions and all that. And at first they're just terrified. Like they're like, we have to do what? But it's amazing how once they get talking and they some ideas start to bounce around, just how excited they are. It's almost like going from we have to do this to we get to do this. Like this is part of school. So I thank you for creating a book that will help them to continue to be curious and wonder about the world and see that it's just this beautiful, curious place we live, and wanting to know more about it, I think, is pretty awesome.
Yeah. And like what you're doing there, I think the key there is that kids, especially little girls, are taught like if you don't get the right answer, if you're not perfect, then you're not smart. It's like this binary thing that you have to strive for perfection, and failure is the ultimate thing to avoid. And so when you present that scientific method, the scientific method, failure is baked in. You're expected to fail many times to be able to work your way towards truth, which then allows us to build knowledge. But with the book, my book, I try to encourage kids to think about failure in a different way, to make sure that they see it as a learning moment. Like, wonderful, this is failure. We're learning how this doesn't work. That's just as valuable as learning how it does work. And so seeing it as like a more of a positive or neutral at best thing, or neutral at worst thing, is the framework that I try to tweak. There's just like a lot of studies that show girls in particular are taught that perfection is the ultimate goal and failure is something to avoid, which contributes to girls leaving the sciences because it is so hard to be perfect all the time in STEM.
Yeah, it is so sad what we have done to girls with that. And also even like youth sports, like how when they get like, it's like we're, there's so many, you know, girls in like first, second, third, fourth grade playing sports, but less and less and less as they get older, they're shying away from that. I think that's really sad. So how can we fix that, Emily?
Oh, how do we fix this ginormous problem?
What's a step? Maybe not fix it, but what can we do as, you know, gatekeepers of books, as parents, as teachers to help girls, the girls that we serve, see what's possible and live the life that they want to live.
Yeah. I love that that's a really good way to look at it, because there are so many things. I've thought about this problem quite a bit along the pipeline that need to be done, not just to inspire more girls to see themselves in STEM, but make them feel welcome, provide a community, and make them feel safe once they're there so that they don't enter a space where they're like, I don't feel welcome here. Why did I do this? And then get out of there. But I think one thing you can do when they're younger is present themselves with role models in the sciences that look like them. The power of representation like cannot be overstated. Like showing them kids who look like themselves on YouTube or on Instagram or on TikTok, or like meet them where they're at. You know, if they love TikTok, find role models on TikTok for them to watch. If they're on YouTube, find it on YouTube. If they love books, find it in books. And it just changes slowly. It seeps into their subconscious about what they, the image that comes to mind when the word scientist or engineer or astronaut or whatever it is fills the back of their head. Like, what do they conjure?
What is your hope for this book?
Well, I love, my dream for this book is that it is something that is kept on a shelf for a lazy afternoon or a restless morning, and that there are like torn pages and dog-eared experiments and like underlines and yeah. highlights and just like something that is well used and just looks like a recipe book that a yeah. family has on their shelf that they've opened 1,000 times and they always end up on a different page. And it just like, it brings families joy. Like the goal is to bring the adult and the child together to do something that brings them both joy. And they're also learning and being curious along the way.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Yarn. Thank you to Emily for chatting with me about her new book and for all that she does to get our young learners excited about science. Thank you to my co-host, Travis Yonker, for helping me edit this episode. Travis, I hope you're as excited as I am about March Madness. Michigan State men's and women's team should be in the tournament. Caitlin Clark, will she make a run? Get that one thing she doesn't have. Oh, it's so exciting. And thank you to all of you for listening to this episode, for subscribing, for sharing it with your friends. It means the world to us. I'm Colby Sharp. Thanks for listening.